Good morning and welcome back to Tech Days Online. My name is Martin Kern. I'm joined here with Alan Richards. Hi, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Great
good,
to be here.
Good. So Alan's going to talk us through migration, basically, from on-premise office to the cloud. Just as we're going through that, if you've got any questions, use Tech Days, hashtag Tech Days on Twitter to ask those questions or just get involved in the conversation. And we've got a team of people backstage that are helping us with that. But so Alan, you're going to talk us through, in the context of schools and education, migrating from on-premise to the cloud, basically.
Yeah, so basically what I'm going to do is look at an education environment and then move to the cloud.
Okay.
And look at steps for that and actually then just talk about some best practice and how you're going to get there without really upsetting your users, which is the end goal, is to actually make sure it's seamless to the end user.
I guess those users are hard enough to manage as it is, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in education for a long time and was a network manager in a school in different schools for a long time, and they're a different environment, a different beast, shall we say.
Yeah.
You've got, I mean, you've got a lot of people in that organisation that you've got to keep happy.
So I guess it's pupils and students and staff.
Pupils, students, staff. You've got also governors and parents and that sort of thing. So it's really, really, and unfortunately, nowadays those environments don't stop. Yeah. Whereas years and years ago, schools were 9 till 3 or whatever. It doesn't stop anymore nowadays. They're ongoing. Teachers and students, to a certain extent, are still getting their email all day. In the evenings, Saturdays and Sundays, it's making that move seamless, basically, to make sure that they're happy people.
Great. Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing how we do this then.
So what I was going to do to start with is just introduce a little bit about myself. So I'm an independent consultant. So I work for a lot of companies around in the UK and abroad doing this sort of job. Yeah. Because I've been in IT a long while and education mainly, and I've also been an MVP for 6 years. So in theory, I do know what I'm talking about, hopefully, which will come across today.
That's true, yeah.
My details on there and a shameless plug for another MVP, Alex Pierce and myself's podcast. We do an education-based podcast, so keeping people up to date with what's in Office 365 education-wise, so they can keep up to date and know what's happening, and more specifically with the changes, because the changes in Office 365, as Wes pointed out in his last two sessions, they're quite regular, and for education, that has to be planned in advance to make sure they're okay for students to use and that sort of thing.
Okay.
That's what we try
to do. So very much an education focus then for most of the work you do.
It is, a lot of independent schools in the UK, and actually one of the schools I'm going to show on here is basically, we work with a school in Dubai, an English speaking school over there.
Right.
And we've got a few over there that we look after, which is interesting, especially for
site. Nice trips when you have to go in there, make sure everything's working.
We try and keep them happy and make a few site visits on a regular basis.
Yeah,
it's reasonable. Yes, a lovely beach.
Very much so. Okay, great.
So the first slide, basically why would people, what are education like at the moment for a lot of places? So education historically has been Microsoft based. Yeah. A lot of that was to do with the fact that Microsoft were excellent in their marketing of licenses to education.
Okay.
It was great. You could get in there quite cheaply and build your infrastructure and everything.
Yeah.
Education also, they're large networks. One thing, when you saw the title, migration at scale for education, a lot of people think, well, it's only a school.
Sure.
But what you have to remember is secondary schools in the UK, a lot of them have got 1,000+ students.
Right. Yeah.
A couple of hundred people. Staff, so that there can be 1,200 users in that, and they're already established identity management, so they've got AD and that sort of thing built already and waiting to go.
Okay.
And then really the other thing is they've got a lot of data.
Right.
So over years, schools have built up resources. They have schemes of work and that sort of thing for students to use and staff to use. So they've got a lot of data that you've got to get into Office 365. Now that can be a rather daunting prospect for a lot of network managers, because while you've got a lot of people and a lot of data, the one thing with education is that you don't have many IT staff.
Right. Yeah.
The funding rightly goes to the students, not so much technical staff.
Yeah.
So you could probably talk in three or four members of staff.
Right.
So for them to then start thinking, right, how do I move my mail? How do I move my SharePoint? You know, how do I start using Skype for Business? How do I start using, you know, Microsoft Classroom? All those sort of things, it's quite a daunting prospect.
Sure.
While still keeping everybody happy.
Yeah.
On a day-to-day basis.
I guess that's the value proposition of the cloud, really, isn't it?
It is. And then, you know, I remember years and years ago being here at a Microsoft conference run by an old friend of mine, Ray Fleming, who now works for Microsoft in Australia, actually. Right. And we were, there was a very first introduction to cloud from an education point of view. Okay. And the first reaction, I'll be perfectly honest, and a lot of people know this, was, I'm not doing that, I'll lose my job. Obviously, that's not the case. You've still got to manage it, but it's the value proposition that you get rid of your on-premise services, your bits of tin, if you like, and move those to the cloud, giving you time to manage and look after the students and the teachers and keep them happy. Plus everything else that's there. I mean, at the end of the presentation, I've got a long list of products that Microsoft have built on top of Office 365 that education can use. You know, Power BI, Classroom, Sway, Video, the list goes on, and Microsoft are constantly adding to that. So, you know.
Great, okay.
So, preparation.
Yeah.
To me, the first thing you ever do with an education environment, and any environment, whether it's business as well, to move to the cloud, is to prepare. The first thing I would say is auditing.
Right.
So what have you got? How much mail have you actually got? Because one thing you'll find is that they build up over time and people don't really take much notice. Yeah, you know.
The state of my inbox is awful. For
And you know, with the best will in the world, the most of us don't really empty our deleted items that often, unless it's forced on us by the organisation. So you can find that actually your mailboxes are really, really large.
Yeah.
And you need to look at that. Can you clean it up? Can you trim those down? Can you get your users? Can you put some policies in place on Exchange on-prem if you've got it to actually force the emptying of deleted items?
So this is making sure that the thing you're migrating from is in as good a shape as it can be.
Yeah, you really want to be migrating a good set of data.
Yeah.
Not old sort of data that, you know, you've that email telling you about the staff Christmas party from 2005.
Yeah.
It's not really an email you want to put in the cloud, you know. It may be a good party, but that's not really really relevant. The other thing is Active Directory. So with a lot of schools and a lot of organisations, you will sync your Active Directory to Office 365.
Yeah.
That's how you carry on your control of identity management.
Okay.
But you need to have a clean Active Directory.
Right.
You need to have it organised properly in sort of organisational units and OUs so that you can then use AAD Connect to sync it to the cloud, but you can select who gets synced. So you're not taking job lot of every single user into Office 365. So it's just that clean up. And then really the last thing is to plan.
Yeah.
So plan your phases. So you're probably going to do mail first, get that right. Are you going to do that in stages? So are you going to do all of the staff first and leave the students on-prem, or the other way around, students first, then staff stay on-premise? Or are you going to do it in batches by department?
Yeah.
So at a school we worked with recently, we're having a rollout of laptops, new laptops to staff. So we actually rolled out the migration of mail at the same time as they...
Because there's a bit of disruption
to those users already. And we batched it up, which I'll show you in a bit of how you batch those things up by department. And we did an initial sync, and then actually when they were being handing their laptops back, we pressed the button to sync their mail finally and move them to the cloud, and then they got their new laptop back, new office, and they were
running
in the cloud.
And so presumably it's relatively easy to route mail in that scenario where you've got some of the users still on-prem, some in the cloud, but they need to keep their email addresses intact.
It is fairly straightforward, especially if you've got the latest versions of Exchange.
Right.
And that's one of the things we sometimes have issues with when we're doing large-scale migrations, especially in the education market.
Yeah.
Some schools on older versions of Exchange.
Yeah.
And the way you migrate them is different as well, depending on the version of Exchange. So, for instance, the older versions can't run in what's known as hybrid mode.
Okay.
So hybrid mode is you can use from Exchange 2010 with the latest service pack and seat updates.
Yeah.
And what that does, it allows the on-premise server and the cloud server to actually talk to each other.
Right, okay.
And that routing that you're talking about is automatic. So a mail will come in for a user who's in the cloud if it's still coming into the on-premise server, and the on-premise server will say, well, actually, that's a cloud user. I'll send it over here. So a lot of you, a lot of organizations we do actually, we try to upgrade their on-premise server first. Because we do find that the hybrid mode is the best option for moving mail to the cloud. So we try and upgrade them on-premise, which sounds a bit counterproductive.
But again, it's putting you in that best position to move to the cloud, isn't it?
If you're going for the it also works out any kinks that you may have in your current Exchange environment.
Sure.
So we normally upgrade them to an on-premise version. At the moment, we go for 2013.
Yeah.
And we then can then configure hybrid mode and then actually move everybody everybody's mail to the cloud.
Great. Okay.
So that's
preparation is very important then, as it is with most projects. Yeah.
It is, and I suppose the first step in that is you actually need a tenant.
Right.
So it's okay thinking, right, I'm going to exchange, do all my mail and data and everything, but you need that tenant to start with. You need to sign up. In this case, in education, there's a specific.
This is an Office 365 tenant.
An Office 365 tenant. So in education, there are specific ones.
Right.
Because basically they're free for education.
Right, okay. Best price.
Best price possible, yeah. So straight away, there's the value add.
Yeah.
So this mail server here is costing me X amount to run. I have to keep patching it.
Yeah.
I have to keep updating it. Whereas I can go to Office 365 and actually run Exchange for free.
Yeah.
It's
a bit of a no-brainer, really.
Fairly straightforward, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be honest. So it's getting that. And then the next thing, really, is getting your users to the cloud.
Yeah.
So after you've done your cleanup, which is what we talked about, you know, then you need the software. And it's a free piece of software, again, provided by Microsoft. So it's Azure Active Directory Connect, it's called.
Yeah.
You stick it on a server. Doesn't need to be a particularly powerful one. It'll just run on a...
This is a server on-premise.
On-premise server. So it doesn't need to be powerful. It'll work on something just a little bit more than a default Windows spec.
Okay.
Basically, what that does is look at your local Active Directory.
Yeah.
You tell it your OUs when you've organized them, what you want to sync, and it puts those people into the cloud.
Okay, simple as that.
And it really is as simple as that. Yeah. You have to set up a couple of users so that they can talk to your AD and talk to the cloud, obviously. But that synchronization then, and then I think it runs every 3 hours.
Right.
And it will sync passwords as well. So your users then will log in with a normal email address and their normal network password.
Yeah.
There is one caveat to that.
It sounded too good to be true.
And that is when you clean up Active Directory, I don't know whether you're familiar with the UPN, user principal name.
Vaguely, yeah.
Vaguely. So this is the name that is given into a user in Active Directory.
Yeah.
And a lot of schools and a lot of organizations have an internal domain.
Right.
So you'll have something like Microsoft.local or Microsoft.intern or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
Office 365 obviously needs a publicly routable domain.
Yeah, sure.
So you have to add a domain suffix to your on-premise Active Directory, which normally matches your email address.
Right.
So if you've got an internal domain called Microsoft.local, you'll add into that domain Microsoft.com.
Okay, yeah.
And then every user has to have that suffix added as their UPN.
Yeah.
It's not an onerous task. It's just one thing that you need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Because what happens is if you sync your users, Microsoft, the AAD Connect will still sync them as Microsoft.internal, but what you'll end up getting in Office 365 is martin.kern.microsoft.onmicrosoft.com.
Yeah.
You'll get that on Microsoft.com at the end of the of your username rather than martin.kern@microsoft.com.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's something to be aware of. Basically, if we come out of here, what you end up getting, if we look in here at some users in this school who have been extremely nice and said I can actually use them as a demo.
So these are real users.
So actually, this is the school in Dubai that I was talking about. So you can see here that actually it says here synced with,
okay.
And it says synced with Active Directory.
Yeah.
So these users have been taken from the on-premise environment,
yeah.
Put into the cloud. Anything that's in on-premise will be copied to Office 365. So if you've got in there, say for instance a teacher, you've got in there their office,
yeah.
Their department, all those sort of key features, they will go to Office 365. It will sync
all
those
the, all
as
the
well.
All the data that's added into Active Directory.
Yeah, so everything that's in there will go at the same time. So all these users, can quite happily log in.
Yeah.
They can log in with their email address and their network password.
Yeah.
So it makes it easy for them. You're keeping the user happy.
Sure.
Because they should know their email address.
Yeah. I'd like to think so, yeah.
You'd hope so. And they should actually know their network password.
Yeah.
Although, having worked in education for a long time, we do know that students forget them on a regular basis anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's fine. You change your AD, yeah. It resets into Office 365 sure. as well. So that's basically how you get your users to Office 365.
Okay.
So as I said here, you've got this established identity management. You use AAD Connect to actually yeah. put them in there, and that's your user synced. What you then need to do is license them.
Okay.
So you've got to license your users. And with Office 365 for Education, you get a number of licenses for free.
Right.
So you get Office 365 Education for faculty and Office 365 Education for students.
Faculty being the staff.
Faculty
teachers.
Being staff, yeah. Obviously, it's the American
yeah.
word for staff.
Yeah.
So that means you can actually bring those people into there, license them up for what they want.
Yeah.
And if we take a look at the school here, we can, if I just pick a user here, we can see here the sort of licenses. So
okay.
This student here has obviously got a license for Education for Students and Education Plus.
Yeah.
Now the difference is with those is that Education has Office Online in it,
right.
and I think Yammer for academic yeah. and all the other bits and bobs. The Education Plus gives them the ability to download Office.
To the local client.
To the local client.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to go through your education license reseller to get that license.
Okay. Yeah.
It's part of that that process, and they give you a code and you put it into here and
sure.
gives you the licenses.
Okay.
So that's how you can use it. You can obviously see here as well group memberships.
Yeah.
So the group memberships are literally they've come from Active Directory as well.
Right.
So all of that data, all of that structure you've put in place, all of those security principles and everything you've got
yeah.
copies to Office 365.
Right.
So you're not going to lose anything.
Sure.
You're not suddenly going to have to recreate all your users, all your groups, and have to think about it all over again.
Yeah.
So
it's
it
good.
Just makes okay. it a lot easier. So if we go back here, so mail.
Yeah.
With most schools we work with, the first thing they actually want to migrate and the first thing they come to us and say, look, I'm thinking of going to Office 365, I want to move my mail.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, it's a extremely quick win.
Yeah, sure.
It's Microsoft have put into place a lot of tools to migrate your mail to Office 365.
Yeah.
And if you get that hybrid mode, as I talked about,
yeah.
configured, it's extremely easy to actually move them to the cloud, not wanting to outdo any partners of any work, obviously.
Sure.
but you can do that and you can get them there.
Yeah.
So that's what people come to us. Now, the first thing I would say is, like we said, look at your mailbox sizes.
Yeah.
Because the problem is that it's okay saying you're going to move, but if you've got 1,000 users all with, say, 1 gig of mailbox
yeah.
storage, that's an awful lot
is,
of
yeah.
database you've got to move. And it's got to go across the internet.
I was going to say, bear in mind, this is going,
into
the cloud.
This
here,
is
yeah.
not taking a hard drive,
yeah.
shipping it to Microsoft with
yeah.
your Exchange database on and actually saying, please put that in the cloud.
Yeah.
You've got to move those mailboxes over the internet.
Yeah.
So there's a number of factors. So how big's your internet pipe?
Yeah.
What's contention on your internet? Obviously, Microsoft throttle to a certain
yeah.
extent. They can't
sure.
allow your pipe coming in to
yeah.
clog it up for everybody else
sure,
who's
yeah.
using Office. So there's all of that and all the hops and stops and everything in
yeah.
between. So you've got to consider that. So how long is that going to take? Which then
sure.
brings you back down to moving it in stages.
Right.
So do you start to batch things up, either you know, we're going to move all of the staff, or we're going to do them in departments.
Yeah.
The advantage for a lot of schools is that you've got a nice 6-week block of time where you can actually consider this.
So handy summer
holidays. So that's summer holidays where you can actually say, look, I'm sorry, but for a 2-week period or whatever, you cannot access your email because we are moving it. Inconvenient, yes, but the school is not in the day-to-day business of running. So it's not in the day-to-day business of educating children.
Yeah.
So you're not going to interrupt it too much.
No.
So there is that planning ahead of actually what stages are you actually going to do it in, because it's going to take time.
Sure.
It really is going to take quite a while to actually start moving all of that data.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
So after you've done your mail,
what
a lot of people then come back to us and say, what about SharePoint?
Right.
What about all this 2 terabytes of data I've got over here sitting in my file server that's slowly, you know, my RAID is dying. I don't want to start replacing it. How do I get that to the cloud?
Sure.
And again, very much like mail, you've got to plan it, because you've got to think about tidying up that data in the first instance. So can you tidy it up? Can you put it in a bit more structure? And then how are you going to structure SharePoint?
Yeah,
so
sure.
You said you've done a bit of SharePoint work in the past.
Yeah.
You know what it's like, site collections against subsites, against document libraries.
Yeah.
So how are you going to structure all of that? What you don't want to do is take 2 terabytes of data and dump it all into one site collection and fill all that up. You've got to think about how you're
going to... Because it's a different model, especially if you're going from a file server in the school. It's a very different place to go to.
It is. And we with our clients, we spend a lot of work. A lot of time is actually taken up, not by the actual migrating of the data itself, but how are we going to structure it in SharePoint?
Sure.
Because like you say, in a file server, you've got your drive or your RAID or whatever it is, and under that, all the folders for all the departments.
Yeah.
You can't take that drive and put it into Office 365. It won't work, and it's not giving you the best use of SharePoint.
The very concept of structures in SharePoint is less relevant, because there are other ways to discuss. We saw the Delve with Wes earlier on. Those kind of technologies really help you discover documents. It doesn't really matter so much where they are within the
infrastructure. And what we tell a lot of our clients is, like you say, structure, how you structure it. So you may decide that you're actually going to have a site collection per department.
Yeah.
But how that appears in the navigation
is
completely different.
Yeah.
That navigation that appears in the top bar or the left nav of SharePoint bears no relation to how it's actually structured as site collections in the background.
Yeah, sure.
That navigation can be run manually, it can be run by a term store.
Yeah.
Or there are also, you know, JSON and JavaScript ways of actually doing that navigation.
Yeah.
So you can do it however you like. So it's really working out how you want to structure it. In the first instance.
Which is, I mean, that this is a perennial problem, a perennial challenge with SharePoint anyway.
Yes.
Is working that out. That's when, in my days as a SharePoint consultant, I used to spend a lot of time having those conversations with customers about the options around, you could do it like this or you could do it like this, depending on what's best for you.
A lot of our consultancy time is taken up actually working all of that out.
Yeah.
And coming up with a plan. Because then that plan then moves on to how you actually get the data out. So you need that sort of, if you like, Excel spreadsheet, as we do it, to actually then say, feed that into your software that actually does the migration.
Sure.
Structure's key. Permissions are another one.
Yeah.
So you need to look at how, at the moment, you're permissioned. So can, if for instance you have a staff general area, can everybody read that? Can all the staff read and write to it? Mm. Are you open permission? Do you share everything?
So again, it's a different model in SharePoint compared to a local file server.
Because you've then got in SharePoint the fact that if you're going into site collections, there are different permissions on each site collection.
Sure.
So how are you going to do that? How are you going to manage those permissions in there? Then we come on to actual moving.
Yeah.
The moving of the actual data. And there are a number of ways of doing this. So Microsoft have the option, in this instance, to actually ship them a hard drive.
Right.
So there is that option.
So that is actually a thing you can do.
So yes, you can actually start shipping them hard drives, which if you want to, you can. Or the other thing is you actually use third-party pieces of software.
Yeah.
and this is not a shameless plug, this is just a personal preference, but I always use ShareGate. I think it's a great piece of kit. It does exactly what I want it to do, which is literally take it from the server and put it into site collections, subsites, or document libraries. And the nice thing is about this, and it's not just ShareGate, it's all the other pieces of software that do this as well, is that it will copy permissions over.
Right.
And it will copy your audit trail. So you're not going to lose anything.
Okay.
So it's not like you're taking this file that's got an audit trail that the finance department have been working on, put it into SharePoint, and it now looks like it's been completely written in by somebody different. So, you know, migration at or whatever. So it copies all of that because it can recognize this user is in Active Directory.
Yeah.
I look in Office 365 and I can actually see, because they've got their matching UPNs, they can actually match them up.
Sure.
And then it actually puts in all the any old versions, all the permissions, all the modified dates, created dates, all of that audit trail that you need.
So all of that Active Directory preparation is just as relevant and valid for SharePoint.
It is, and that's why we say at the beginning you should actually make sure your Active Directory is prepped up, cleaned, ready, and you know, because it's gonna be better for you in the long run.
Absolutely.
When you actually come to doing Mail and then SharePoint and Skype for Business and everything else that's in Office 365.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got to make sure that that's actually in there and ready and prepped and ready to go.
Yeah. Okay.
So you use that third party software. Not really a thing to do a demo on, unfortunately, to start migrating data.
Yeah.
One, it's going to take a while. The one thing I would say is that in ShareGate, there's a feature, they call it insane mode.
Right.
Okay.
I love a feature called insane mode.
It's a great feature called insane mode. I think it's something to do with the organization. They're a great organization, and they've got that fun element to them, and they've put it into their software.
Yeah.
But basically what that is there's two ways of taking your data to Office 365 using the internet.
Yeah.
There's actually just straight copying it, use the internet and straight into your Office 365 tenant.
Sure.
The other way is actually you can take it and put it in an Azure blob storage.
Okay.
And then Azure will put it into Office 365.
Okay.
The reason for that is that the Azure blob storage can take more data
quicker to
the Azure blob storage. Whereas it's going to be quite slow in Office 365.
And obviously Azure to Office is a...
And then Azure is really a back-end process.
Yeah.
So for them, it's just putting it across on their own back-end network. You have to configure that in same mode.
Right.
At the moment, you get a free Azure blob storage account with your Office 365 tenant.
Okay.
That's at the moment. I don't know whether that's about to change or going to change.
So how does that work with like all of the metadata for the files, like the permissions and the
they stay exactly the same because the ShareGate takes it and attaches it as like metadata to the files and into the blob storage, and then actually puts it back into Office 365.
Okay.
The downside to that, if you like, is that you will see your data leave your environment a lot quicker.
Yeah.
But it won't appear straight away in Office 365. So there is a short delay between actually getting to Azure and then it being put into Office 365.
It's like when you do a bank transfer and it's left your bank account but it hasn't arrived in the other one. It's just somewhere in between
it's just
the two.
Somewhere in the ether. It's going to be there in a bit sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's a good way of doing it. If you want to really, really use Azure Blob Storage, then you can set up your own.
Yeah.
But again, we're not going to cover that.
Sure.
That's sort of a separate discussion completely.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Right.
I love the insane mode button though. That's a great name for.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So you and actually the in the graphical interface, there's a button that says insane.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about ShareGate as well, it's got a load of PowerShell commands.
Right.
So if you're doing a lot of data, and this is what I was on about, the spreadsheet, you can take all of that data and actually put it into PowerShell commands.
Right. Yeah.
So you've not got to do it manually using the interface. But the switch to tell the PowerShell to do it is insane as well.
Brilliant.
So it's, I just do I do like that.
Yeah, sense of humour in software, it's always a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So the one other thing, really, that people talk to us about migrating to the cloud, if you like, is that some schools and a lot of organisations have got a history of using Link or OCS, as it used to be, or the new Skype for Business.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, okay, I want to take that to the cloud. We only use it for instant messaging or internal calls or video conferencing, that sort of thing. How do we move that? That's a bit more complicated to a certain extent, because obviously your Skype for Business account is connected to your Active Directory account.
Yeah.
So it uses your email address.
Right.
So unfortunately, there's no way of actually migrating it over as such to switch over.
Okay.
You actually have to unlicense a user on premise and then put them into Skype for Business.
Okay.
If you try and license them in Skype for Business while they're still licensed for on premise, it just won't work. It will just ignore it and say this user's already got an account somewhere else.
Okay.
If you've never used Skype for Business or OCS or whatever, then it's easy. You license them for it, they log into Skype for Business client with their email address and they start conversing. I mean, I use it daily and you probably do.
We do,
as
well. That's how we operate using Skype.
And I'm constantly using it with clients, with friends.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is, of course, you can actually use it with people with normal Skype accounts now as well.
Absolutely,
I mean, like I say, it's nice when we go to a site visit to the school in Dubai, but a lot of our conversations with them are actually using Skype for Business and video conferencing using that, because obviously we can't be affording to go to Dubai
once a
week.
Which is, it might be nice too.
It'd be nice, but you can't really do that.
Yeah.
So, sort of coming towards the end,
yeah.
the next thing is, okay, you've got into the cloud,
yeah.
you've got your mail, you've sorted out your SharePoint, you're all nicely working away. What do you do now?
Right.
So what else is there?
Yeah.
And on here, obviously, I've got a long list of some of the things that are on there.
Okay.
So there's things like the latest and greatest thing from Microsoft is Microsoft Classroom.
Right, okay.
Which from an education point of view is a big win. And they're really pushing this hard, and they're really pushing the education remit within Microsoft.
Yeah.
So the idea behind Microsoft Classroom is, I think I've got a very basic classroom here, which has actually got no students in it, but it looks fairly straightforward.
So what does Microsoft Classroom actually do?
What Microsoft Classroom does is allows you as a teacher to create a class.
Okay.
And then you can set assignments to those students in that class. Yeah. So it allows you to actually set them their assignments. If you want to attach a Word document or something like that, the students then do that work.
Yeah.
Complete the assignment, and then you can mark it.
Okay.
Now, at the moment, the one thing I would say is it's only in preview at the moment.
Yeah.
So some of the marking things are not, don't quite fit to the UK market.
Okay.
But obviously they'll get there. Yeah. That's why it's in preview, to get that feedback and get and upgrade it and change it. And the thing it works on is actually Office 365 groups. So Wes earlier on showed you all about what Office 365 groups.
Yeah.
And how they're changing, and that's what's at the background of this.
So a group would become a classroom,
effectively. So a group is what is the basically the classroom.
Okay.
And as you can see from this here, you've got, you know, this is where you can have your assignments. At the moment, this one's not got anything in. You can have you've got your calendar, conversations. So straight away from what Wes showed you, you can see there that apart from the assignments, and you'll have to excuse the orange bar, there seems to be some education issues.
Right.
Education services is having a problem at the moment.
Okay, right.
Which is not helpful.
Good timing.
Good timing. So there you can see, obviously, conversations. They're exactly what you see in Office 365 groups, except they've added the assignments and they've called it a class notebook.
Okay.
So
gone are the days of the teacher going through with a red marker pen and scribbling all over one.
Well, I'm sure you could use a drawing tool on Word or something if you really want
like
to use a red pen.
If the teacher's got a surface,
if you've got Surface and a Surface pen, you can go on and scrawl all over that to actually make some changes. But I mean, it's a great piece. It's a great tool.
Okay.
Obviously, it's in preview. There are little bits. You know, there are a few bits here and there that are not quite right yet, but it will get there, and it's already a good tool to start with. So, and Microsoft are pushing it along. At the same time as that, there's a product that Microsoft are working on called Schools Data Sync.
Okay.
So the school's data sync is literally a way of taking the data out of your MIS, your management information system that schools use, which is what they use to set up their timetables and their teaching groups and all that sort of thing. So they've taken that and they can actually then put it into Microsoft Classroom.
Right.
So while at the moment you have to create your own class, what will come in the future is the ability to actually just go down and say, yes, that's my class.
Right.
Because the data has come in from the school's MIS system.
Sure. Okay, makes sense.
So any updates for students in classes, because students move around, that will be automatic. So it's a great tool. Again, it's not, they've not just come out with Classroom and said, oh, there you are, make some classes.
Yeah.
But they've actually thought about the whole thing, you know, the whole getting that data out from somewhere else. At the moment, it's, I think the school data sync is on preview in the US.
Okay.
It's not available in the UK, but it will, it will come eventually, while they iron out a few bits and bobs.
So I imagine the education market is quite different in different countries. The way kids are taught is different, isn't it, across different
countries? Yeah, so I mean, the US market education system is not the same as the UK.
Yeah.
I can't say about any other place. I mean, but the European markets are different again. So it's a difficult area, if you like, to actually try and have one system that's going to cover everything.
Yeah.
Marking schemes are different.
Sure.
That sort of thing. I mean, my wife still works in education, so I know for a fact that this year is the last time they're grading GCSEs by A, B, and C, apparently.
Oh, really?
They're changing next year. I didn't know, but there we go.
That's quite a big change, really.
It is a big change, yeah. So, my, you know, Classroom need to, you know, those changes will have to be come on board as well. So, but they are putting a lot of effort into this market.
Yeah.
A lot of effort. I mean, it's the first time, if you think about it, that Microsoft have actually come out with a product like this that sits on Office 365. It's normally been third parties and add-ins and that sort of thing that people have come out with.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really, really good. It's a great product.
Okay.
So as well as that, one thing we should look at as well is schools make an awful lot of use of movies and videos.
Okay. Right.
So they'll put videos out there, and they'll probably you'll probably find on that data storage when you do your audit.
Yeah.
There's a folder somewhere that's got a load of movie files in or WMVs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So. Again, this is the school in Dubai who have been really, really kind to let me know. This is their Office 365 video.
Okay.
So what they've done is they've created some channels.
So this is their actual
this is their actual video page thing. Yeah. So they have a, they've got some things on there which are to do with subjects.
Yeah.
But they also have things like they do, they call it Just Talks.
Okay.
And what this is actually they do CPD sessions, so training sessions for staff. Okay. And they video them.
Yeah.
So then those videos go up onto Office 365 videos. Yeah. So they're available to all of the staff.
Sure.
So if you couldn't make it, if you were ill, you had to pick your child up from school, any of that, you don't miss the session completely. You can actually go on, look at the session and actually watch the video.
Yeah.
So there's lots and lots of scope there for uploading videos for students. So you know, starting to video experiments in chemistry and that sort of thing that can go up there and a student can watch the experiment over and over again. So it's a great, again, it's a great tool that you can use. You can, again, you can secure it. So one thing that teachers worry about is that students can actually start uploading videos or anything like that.
Yeah.
You can secure it down so only teachers can actually upload videos.
Okay.
And then they students can actually view them.
Yeah.
But the channels idea is great, and it's extremely easy to actually upload a video. Literally all you do is go to the upload button, select a channel that you want it to go in, and then you can drag the file.
So very similar to the kind of experience you might have from YouTube or those kind of interfaces.
Yeah. And then Office 365 will go away and render that video and then put it into the channel.
Sure.
And the nice thing is the back end to this is actually all Azure Media Services.
Yeah.
So it's not sitting in Office 365 as such. So it's using all of that power of Azure Media Services to actually render that and stream that movie out to the
without needing to worry about how to work with Azure Media Services.
Yeah, you don't need to have to worry about how it works. And it also takes the load off your on-premise systems.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know from experience, there's an awful lot of videos out there. So you've got students who produce, you know, for media studies and that sort of thing. And they may want to showcase that somewhere. Well, Office 365 is a great way to showcase it.
Yeah.
It's an internal system. So only people who can log into your Office 365 tenant can actually view that video.
Yeah.
So you're giving that closed environment for people to be able to view all of that kind of data.
Great.
So I think it's great. So
fantastic.
We've got sort of all of that. Then we've got, I mean, one thing we talked about, and Wes has touched on briefly, is Flow and Power Apps.
Sure, yeah.
So he's talked about Flow.
Yeah.
So everybody knows how that works. But the other thing is Power Apps.
Okay.
And Power Apps is a bit one of my little babies to a certain extent, and it's one of my pet projects.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I used to do an awful lot of work with InfoPath.
Yeah. I remember InfoPath.
Well, it's still there. Yeah. It's not gone completely yet. But Power Apps, what I'm playing with at the moment is taking InfoPath forms and building them into Power Apps so that you're basically using Power Apps instead of InfoPath. Because it's a forms, Power Apps is basically a way of giving your users access to data using simple forms.
Yeah.
So it can become from a list, it can come from SQL, all those sort of things. Yeah. So Power Apps is another thing that people can use.
And does that create an app across different mobile platforms?
It does. You can actually create a Power App using using the Power App Studio from Microsoft.
Okay.
And then what it does, you can either have a tablet app or a phone app.
Yeah.
And they're great. They just sit there on the, on your phone or tablet. A company we're talking to at the moment who work a lot with education.
Yeah.
And have a lot of technicians who roam around schools and look after them. It's actually producing a Power App for their phones to be able to update their logs and their calls that they've got for that school.
Yeah.
Rather than what they do at the moment is email and say, this is what I've done today.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking at as well. And finally, because I know we're going to run out of time in a bit, is Forms. So Forms is a great tool from Microsoft.
Yeah.
It allows you to create a very simple quiz type form that you can then distribute to your students.
Right.
So you can have quite an easy quiz that they can use.
Okay.
You can
so this would be good for assessing their
understanding
of a topic.
You can have this ready and then distribute it to them at the end of a lesson. So have they taken in what you've put in there? So it could be a choice question or a quiz. And you can put the question in there and then you distribute that out to them. Okay. So I think Forms is another great tool that Office 365 have come up with.
Yeah.
It's not education specific, but it will actually really be good for education.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of the stuff that we've talked about, we're looking through a lens of education, a lot of the techniques and the idea of being prepared, and that applies to any migration really, I guess.
It does, yeah. I mean, in sort of summary, I suppose, the one thing I would say is that actually the one thing you do need to do is plan and prepare.
Yeah.
We've talked about checking your size of data and preparing your AD and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You need to have that ready. You need to make sure you're in a position to move your data and your mail. And also be aware that it's going to take time.
Sure.
It's not an overnight process.
Yeah.
It's going to take time, which is again part of the planning. Yeah. And when you're there and you're sorted and you're all happy and you're using SharePoint and mail and everything else, try and use everything else.
Yeah.
Sure. Microsoft have provided an awful lot of other applications that go in Office 365. Don't just ignore them and use Exchange and SharePoint.
Yeah.
Look at Forms, Power Apps, Classroom, all those sort of things that are going to make your life a lot better.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you, Alan. That's a really good summary of everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that's it for now, folks. So we're going to take a lunch break now. I think we're coming back at 1 o'clock. And this afternoon, Wes is going to come back and talk about the SharePoint framework for a bit. And then we're going to look at some machine learning and cognitive services technologies with myself and my buddy Martin Beebe. We're then going to have Gary Whitaker to come and talk about Xamarin in the context of using it with Azure Mobile Services. And then finally, Rob Mills is going to come and look at the fun way to do web development, which should be interesting. We've got a robot for that one, so that's good. So we're going to take a lunch break, ready to come back at 1 o'clock. And please keep those questions coming in on #TechDays on Twitter. Okay, see you in a bit.